Hello, my friends. I'm here today with Bhima, and he's speaking to us from the community in Seattle, Washington. And not actually literally Seattle, it's Lynnwood. They're very specific about this. But those of us who don't live there just call it Seattle. Bhima has been the manager of East West Bookshop. And even though he appears still to be sitting in East West Bookshop, it's not a fake background.
But yeah,
it's an illusion that's been created, and I will ask you, Bhima, to explain where you are and what you're doing there.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we closed down East West during the shelter in place, mm-hmm. and this was back in March, and we had to because of that, but also our lease was ending in that location anyway. Mm-hmm. So we were looking for about a year for a new location. And when this happened, we didn't have to look anymore. We just had to move out. So we all kind of had the same idea that, well, Hansa is open. And it wasn't being used for the meditations.
Hansa's the little temple they have on their community grounds.
Uh-huh. Yep. So we put a 5,000 square foot store into a 900 square foot room.
Uh-huh. Very good. But you have no customers or staff.
Yeah.
It's not as crowded.
No, it's 2 foot aisles and it's just me and volunteers. So
I see. Very good. So you're running it online basically insofar.
Yeah, we're working on it. We just did an online event with a nationally known energy intuitive yesterday, and we had 90 people on Zoom. So that was great.
Very good. All of us are finding that we have much bigger audiences than we had when we were actually running real temples in real places. Sure. It's a weird moment. Very weird. But anyway, God's in charge.
Yeah.
Well, Bhima, I'd like to get to know you a little better because I often explain to people whether I know the people I'm talking to or not. Bhima and I have met a few times, mm-hmm. but he didn't grow up in the community that I'm part of. So I'm going to be learning more about him. Same as you all. Sometimes I know a person's life story as well as he does, but not this time. So tell me a little bit about how you grew up, what your interests were, you know, what kind of a child you were mm-hmm. before you met Master, if there was a time before you met Master.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. My mom, I could start with her since uh-huh. she was the one who brought me here.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
She's an Episcopal priest.
Really?
She just retired, but that influenced a lot of my upbringing. My brother and I, William, who lives up at Camano Island Farm mm-hmm. With Zach and Haley, we grew up every Sunday morning in the pew, mm-hmm. and that was a big influence for us. Not so much, well, I'll speak for myself, not so much spiritually, but mm-hmm. just socially mm-hmm. to be in front of people and, you know, to be at the coffee hour and all that. Mm-hmm. But that provided, you know, a foundation for thinking about God and having that be it. You know, it was a weekly thing. My mom would be writing a sermon. Mm-hmm. We'd be in the church hearing the gospel every Sunday for 18 years, you know. Mm-hmm. So we were saturated in that way.
Did you ever have any sense of Christ separate from the coffee hour? I mean, separate from church?
You know, not really. I mean, you look around and it's really a social club. Mm-hmm. We grew up in Tucson, Arizona. That was our first that was my first conscious place that we lived in, although I was born in Utah. Uh-huh. And we were part of a very progressive church that was, they had something my mom teamed up with my godfather, Gordon. They were both priests at the same church, and they started something called the Mass for the Third Millennium. Mm-hmm. And it involved meditation and circle dancing and chanting. Mm-hmm. And there were readings, you know, ecumenical readings from different faiths. Mm-hmm. And so that got into me for sure. Mm-hmm. And that was the more spiritual feeling that I got from it. But that wasn't what brought me into spirituality so much.
Was that spiritual feeling the feeling of fellowship, or was it something that transcended the human experience?
It was just having an awareness. Mm-hmm. I would look around and and you would see these adults who were just so inspired mm-hmm. by the services, even though I wasn't. I was six or seven, you know, I was just, you know, into Pokemon and cartoons and stuff, you know. Uh-huh. But that gets into your subconscious, I think. Uh-huh. And so that provided a whole context for me to revisit later on in life.
Well, it gives you the idea that adult people can have a spiritual life.
Yeah.
Which sure. a lot of children never see adult people having a spiritual life. So you don't think when I grow up, I'll have a spiritual life. I can see how that would really make a difference. No, that's indeed. Very good. So what happens after you're six?
Well, like everybody, I've watched some of our friends here from Seattle. Uh-huh. I was a big nature boy. Uh-huh. And so in my earliest years, that was where I spent most of my time in Tucson. Instead of having woods or, you know, fields around, but you have the desert. Mm-hmm. And so I would like to run through the desert and just the wildlife there, catching lizards and snakes. Mm-hmm. There was definitely a feeling of that I belonged there and that I was of it and not just a, you know, that was kind of my true self was a part of that landscape. Mm. So and I spent a lot of time alone. You know, we went to a private school and my brother was really into reading science fiction and other things. So I was always out there, William, come on outside, let's go play. And he said, no, one more page, you know, mm-hmm. and he'd never show up. And so I spent a lot of time with myself and there was a sense, as I look back, of a presence in those experiences.
Hmm. Very interesting. You know, I grew up in El Paso, Texas.
Oh, wow.
And I wasn't a nature child like that, but I used to ride horseback some and I would ride across that desert. So I have a strong feeling of what you mean. Mm-hmm. That desert landscape is unique and there's something extraordinary about how marvelous for you. So did you finish high school in that desert area?
No. When I was 10 or 9, we moved up to Spokane, Washington,
that's a big
change. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was about 6 hours from here. So mm-hmm. on the other side, exact opposite side of the state. Mm-hmm. And that's where I really grew up. I was only in Tucson for about 6.5 years. That was my early childhood.
Mm-hmm. And how was Spokane for you? Were you able to be as comfortable there as you had been?
It was an adjustment because we were in private schools, private school in Tucson. And so it was very sheltered. And then being thrust into public school in a different state, I was pretty shocked at the children's level of consciousness. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were things that didn't occur to me other than watching them in a movie, you know, bullying and just, you know, vulgarity and things like that. This was fifth grade. But it was just, I just never been exposed to those elements, you know? So I had to kind of, not necessarily grow up, but just blend in a sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you become like them or did you just go underground? How did you cope?
I definitely became like them.
Ooh,
it was, awesome. It was sink or swim. I mean, uh-huh. Spokane is an all-American city, you know, it has that picket fence and, uh-huh. and mow the lawn every Sunday and kind of feel to it. But it's your general primary school experience, and so I had to adapt to the whole sports culture and all of those things. William was like in seventh grade, so he was pretty firmly established in his own weirdness, you know, mm-hmm. in his differentness. Mm-hmm. But I was still in that malleable, you know, follow what your friends are doing stage. Mm-hmm. So I was in that to a certain degree for, you know, the first 3 or 4 years of being in Spokane.
So you refer to it that way. Did you, what happened after 3 or 4 years? Where did, what changed?
Well, you know, when I got into high school, my dad's an old hippie.
Uh-huh.
And so that was the other influence. My mom was a priest and my dad is an old hippie. Uh-huh. And so I was always fascinated by pulling out his LPs and, you know, I remember one morning waking up to Jimi Hendrix just being blasted. Uh-huh. And my dad's like, hey boys, it's time for pancakes, you know? And so there was just there was this dormant element of that got awakened really in high school, a love for 60s music and the uh-huh. counterculture, and eventually getting into psychedelics and the whole Grateful Dead vibration. And that's when I started to really move towards God and towards spirituality.
The sins of the father were repeated in the son.
Totally. It's interesting.
I went to Stanford for 1 year in 1965, and the Grateful Dead are from Palo Alto, and they were just starting. I mean, nobody who knew who they were. And I immediately lost interest in college because I'd come for wisdom and all they had was knowledge.
Yeah.
So every Friday, I mean, I believe I did this for months. Somewhere the Grateful Dead was playing in the area, and the word would go out, and it would just be like somebody's house. And I mean, people would look at me and say, what? You did that? I mean, to me, it was just like, you know, that's just what I did. I was 18, and we'd just go, and I'd go to their party. And so it's marvelous to hear that that's what you did too.
I was really into it. Yeah.
Were you a reincarnated hippie? Do you think that you overdosed? Do you think you overdosed young in that life? You had to start over.
I don't. You know, I don't. I think it may have been that I missed out.
Oh, I see. You were straight or something, or you were the father.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that has popped into my head, you know, after coming to Ananda, is that perhaps I was a renunciate, and I was looking out of my, of my cloistered window at all of the beings and stuff.
I see. Yeah. So were you alone in that, or was there a movement? Was there a retro movement?
Yeah, I don't, in Spokane, there was a group. I mean, I don't know how many of them, but there was definitely, probably all over the country, there are Grateful Dead pockets and hippie pockets. And, you know, the children of the 60s pass it on to their mm-hmm. children and their children's children, and wherever there's hippies still, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I got into that, you know, the whole LSD psychedelic mushroom thing. Mm-hmm. And then I got out of it in just, you know, a couple of years when I started getting into meditation. But that was my gateway into Ananda, actually.
So put that, you know, Swami himself was not in favor of drugs at all. Yeah. But he had to admit that it was the gateway for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, he had to see that it often opened a door that wouldn't have been opened otherwise. So it opened the door for you. So what happened after that?
Well, I, you know, I had what I kind of call my psychedelic summer. It was 2011. Mm-hmm. And I was going into senior year in high school. Mm-hmm. And I just started to have this series of adventures, you know. Mm-hmm. Inner adventures that they kept leading inexorably to meditation. Mm-hmm. That summer, my dad had several pivotal conversations with me. And, you know, they were very troubled by my, you know, rebellious ways. But my dad, I remember he said, I was Mark at the time. He said, Mark, what are you trying? Why are you doing this? And he's from Texas too. Mm-hmm. And I said, it just came out of me. I said, well, I guess I'm trying to have a spiritual experience. Mm. And he said, well, you should try this. And he handed me Be Here Now. Huh. And he handed me the autobiography of a yogi.
Wowie zowie.
And I put down, I immediately gravitated to Be Here Now because I was into the whole Harvard early 60s experiments. And I heard about Richard Alpert and Timothy Leary. And I just found that the book was the experiences in there were some of the experiences that I'd had on mushrooms. Mm-hmm. And that I wanted to follow that trajectory of moving away from, you know, the show, you know, where you put a coin in the machine, you see the oneness, and then mm-hmm. the curtains close. And I wanted to have that experience for my own, like Ram Dass's guru named Karoli Baba. This amazing mystical person and blanket, you know? And mm-hmm. and then I started reading the AY, and I was just the pictures really just drew me in of these saints. And you just, I never met anybody like that before. And I believed every word of it. just because of these experiences that I'd had with the psychedelics, I just knew that intuitively that this was real.
Right. Wow, fantastic. So now you're what, 16, 17?
Yeah, I would have been just about turning, I would have just have turned 17.
So what did you do with all this? Did it get you out of the mushrooms?
It did. I was a regular partier and had all sorts of bad habits, and but I was determined that I would try to meditate because I wanted to. That's the only thing I could see I could do with my life was, to follow the steps of the Buddha or the great sages. It just seemed what was real. And so my dad and I actually joined a meditation group at a local Buddhist temple. That's all we had. It was a little mindfulness group. And I went there every Wednesday we meditated for about an hour. Mm-hmm. And then I started meditating every day. And I had a meditation buddy in high school, which is hard to believe, but he lives here at the community now. His name's Stanley. Uh-huh. And he was a grade lower than me, but he said, I hear that you go off and meditate on your lunch break. Can I join you? Huh. And he was with me every single day, pretty much from then on lunch. So
you actually are a high school senior.
Yeah.
What year would this have been?
This would be 2011 going into 2012.
So 2011, you're a high school senior in Spokane, Washington. With all due respect, I've been to Spokane. So you're in Spokane, Washington, and during your lunch break of high school, you're going off to meditate.
Yeah.
And now somebody goes with you.
Yeah.
Congratulations, my man. That was pretty original determination. Good for you. So now you and Stan are out there meditating every lunch break. And what happens next?
Well, you start to see there's a real agenda in senior year in a high school. All the professors are saying, they even put up a map with pins where everybody was going to college. And there was only two people in my, I was in all these honors classes, and there was only two people in the AP program that weren't going to college. Uh-huh. And it was me and this guy named Steve, who was going to Fiji to do snorkeling. and we were the only ones, and they asked, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know, but I can't move forward with this. It just, I looked at my teachers, my best teachers, and they all looked fidgety and distracted. And then I look at the AY and I see, Bhadri Mashai, just levitating. And I'm like, that's what I want. I don't want to follow and, the 98-99% of people. And anyway, I my dad, again, he must have been being guided by Master, because he sent me this link, and it was for ananda.org for the Living with Spirit program. Mm-hmm. That was happening that summer in July. Mm-hmm. And he said, I think you'd like this. And it was organic gardening, mm-hmm. Yoga, camping, mm-hmm. music, meditation. And I thought, well, yeah, that sounds really great. So my late grandmother fronted the money. Mm-hmm. And I think she's from East Texas. I mean, she's she was an old timer. Mm-hmm. And she thought it was some church camp, I think,
we didn't really tell her. We skipped the details. Okay. So
yeah. But at any rate, I went and I said, I'm going to go check out what a community that's based off of this type of lifestyle is like. And uh-huh. I can and see if I want to make a big commitment towards student loan debt and things like that later. So I signed up for it and told all my friends about it. And they were pretty nonplussed, uh-huh. at the idea of somebody doing that. But I did it anyway, and so glad I did.
Uh-huh. So did you never look back?
I never looked back.
Never looked back? So you did the summer intern program and then came back?
Well, I was really lucky because that's where I met Zach and Haley. That's where I met my wife, Bhakti, and and Pien, who was living there. She became my sister-in-law.
Oh, my goodness.
In that program, on the fifth day of being there, I met Swami Kriyananda, uh-huh. which is the greatest blessing of my life. And
spend a moment on that. How did it feel when you first met him? What was it like for you?
Well, you know, I remember everybody in the room anticipating that he was going to come in to the to the dome there at the Crystal Hermitage. And when he came in, it was like, have you ever seen those time lapse pictures of flowers moving with the sun?
Yeah.
It was like the sunflowers all following him across the room. And everybody just opened up and blossomed. And I was speechless because here was somebody like an AY that I was meeting, somebody that brought everybody's consciousness up. And you could feel it. He was holding it, or it was being held. It wasn't necessarily him, but it was just the new environment was this consciousness that was in the room. And, it was definitely life-changing.
That was a very accurate description. That was really well put. I mean, I've been in that dome countless times when Swami walked into it. That is exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. So from that point, Ananda was what, more your home, or how did it?
Well, I'd only been there 5 days.
Oh, I see, 5 days.
And you know, I walked right in off a Greyhound bus. It was 20-hour Greyhound bus from Spokane, and I got picked up, and it was Sunday service. And before I knew it, it was you know, the purification ceremony. And that was my first, you know, my first experience with an Ananda person was the master says, open your heart to me and I will enter. I said, okay, here we go. I didn't know anything about Swami Kriyananda, but, you know, when I met him, I had the pleasure of asking him a spiritual question. I don't talk about it that much, but I think I need to, and I think I'm going to write it down, but, basically, I asked him one of these bogus questions just so that I could have a moment, you know, to talk with him. And what he said was, he said, don't worry about spiritual progress. Someday you'll just say, gee, I'm not the same person I was anymore. And then he looked at me and he said, but I do hope you stay here. You're an old friend of mine.
Oh my gosh.
And I almost didn't even hear what he said, but Badri tapped me on the knee and said, you know, he doesn't say that very often, so he really means that. And that there was a smriti that happened, you know, a divine memory of a feeling of knowing that what he said was true. And that, of course, was a miracle. How could somebody I'd never met know me? And how could I feel that was a true experience? So that was one of those things that you don't turn back from, you know. And then the rest, you know, I was just meditating because I just felt that blessing of being shown something that is there that we're not aware of, a higher reality, you know. And, oh, sorry.
No, at the end of Swamiji's life, he knew he didn't have any time. And so he was much more, he was much more willing to just look at you and say that because he knew that he didn't have 5 years to win you.
Yeah.
You know, anything like that. So what a great blessing for you, exactly as you felt it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was almost as if he didn't want to, it felt like it was Divine Mother coming through him because he just moved on to the next question. It was completely impersonal. Mm-hmm. But I feel that that was my moment for him to make sure that I knew this is where I was supposed to be, because, you know, he said, okay, I'm not as young as I used to be. Let me get up and I'm going to go rest now, or something like that. And, and Maria was helping him out of the dome. And then he stopped, you know, in front of me, maybe a couple paces. And again, he looked right in my eyes and he said, bye-bye. And that was just so that I knew that it wasn't a dream or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's why I've stayed all these years, for sure.
Well, that was a humdinger. I'm awfully glad I asked that question.
Yeah,
that is, you know, Swamiji, just because you brought this up, I came to understand that he never thought things through. He didn't need to think things through. He operated beyond the place of thought. So he wouldn't calculate it. Oh, I may never see him, anything like that. He had absolute trust in what flowed through him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just you saw it just exactly. It wasn't actually impersonal in the sense of he knew it was you, but it was just more like this is what needs to be said, and so I'll say it.
Right.
And this is my divine duty to simply share this this thought because Divine Mother has given it to me. And thank God you took it so well. Good man. So then you have days 6, 7, and 8 in the internship program. And yeah. At some point it ends. So what did you do when it ended? Did you stay there? Well, did you?
My mom came down. I was still, you know, a minor almost. I didn't have a car or anything. So she came down and picked me up. And we, that's from the village. And we drove back to Spokane. Uh-huh. And I spent the next month getting my driver's license and
that's getting... so funny. Yeah. Okay, now that I'm a disciple of a great master, an invitation from Swami Kriyananda to spend the rest of my life on the path, I'll get a driver's license. Okay.
It was an adjustment. I mean, coming down to Sacramento from that. Mm-hmm. But I just got my ducks in a row, so to speak, mm-hmm. and I came back for another 3 months. Uh-huh. Doing the Karma Yoga program. Uh-huh. Got to be in the Finding Happiness movie, which was a lot of fun. Uh-huh. That's the first time I saw you. It was at the garden party.
Oh, yeah, that's right, of course.
So I got to put on the SRF monk clothing, and and that was a wonderful experience. Uh-huh. And then a month after that ended, you know, Bhakti and I had gotten together at that point, and we followed Zach and Haley up to Seattle. We felt a real kinship and a bond between them. And so we moved here about coming on 8 years ago to the community.
Right. And now you have a little boy. How old is your little boy now?
He's a 2.5.
I love the smile. I love to ask papas about their babies because they get smiles just like that one.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
Yeah, I've only seen him in pictures, but he is. I can see he's wonderful. It's a wonderful life. You know, your papa, your father. I've joked with people who are born at Ananda. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, verse 42, says, if one tries for God realization and doesn't quite make it, maybe you'll be born into a family of yogis. And such births are hard to obtain, it says, because yogis don't have that many children. So I've been asked if someone... 642s are the people who are born at Ananda Village, but it's also people like yourself whose birth parents also turn out to be your spiritual parents.
Yeah.
A very, very, very good karma. Well, I'm going to ask you a question I've asked lots of people. So by this point, I like to hear the same different answers. I like to ask the same questions and get such different answers.
Sure.
If you think about being a disciple, when you think about, I get to be a disciple for the rest of my life, what does that mean to you?
Well, that's a great question. Well, it's, you know, it's been humbling because when I started, I thought I was, you know, this wunderkind, you know, and then I came to a community where people have dedicated their lives to it. Mm-hmm. And I saw that I was just dipping my toe into the water. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, being a father and having such a constraint on free time, mm-hmm. I feel grateful to be a disciple because it's a lifeline to, you know, my goal is to be that way. And, you know, so as long as I keep myself in this vibration, then I know that I've got a chance, you know, mm-hmm. towards that goal. So it's been very humbling for me.
Yeah, humility is good.
Yeah. It's a good place to be.
It's a good place to be.
Yeah.
Well, Bhima, it's been an absolute joy to spend this time with you. And thank you for being so open and just sharing so much from the heart. And God bless you and your family.
Thank you, Asha.
Bless you.
Blessings.